The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
Good evening, this is Stan Claff, and thanks for joining us on this Thursday. We're waiting expectantly to hear what the President will be announcing in the next few days. I believe he's going to tell us something. Are we going up? Are we going down? But tonight we're privileged to have with us Aideen Davis, a counseling psychologist and social worker in private practice. She's worked with adults, teenagers, and children grappling with various life challenges. Prior to working in private practice, she worked at Childline and Hospice, which sets us up for the topic of the show, which is experiencing loss during COVID, and I'm sure many have you have experienced loss. I myself have experienced some loss. My co-host, Natalie Solomon, Dr. Natalie Solomon, is also on the show with us. She's also experienced some loss during this period, so it's an interesting topic, and we're going to explore some of the things, how to deal with it, what to do and what not to do, and so welcome, Aideen, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
Did I give you an adequate introduction, or would you like to add to it?
No, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit. I mean, experiencing loss, people experience loss in different ways. I mean, some people may experience loss of family, people die. They may be at home and they loss of income, loss of work. There's various losses. So what are we going to explore tonight?
Well, so I think, as you say, the most profound loss, obviously, is the loss of a loved one and what comes with that. But, what we've realized through this prolonged period already that we've been in is that there's so many other losses, some of which are quite specific and unique to this pandemic time that we're going through. So I think perhaps for us to think a little bit around what some of those losses are, and then perhaps some of the ways that are best to manage and cope with them as we go through it.
Okay, that's great. So can I give you, can I kick off with a little bit of a personal experience?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so on the 2nd of July, I lost my mother. She's 100 years old. And, of course, we couldn't say Kaddish. We couldn't have a full funeral with a full attendance. And I spent Shloshim and not Shloshim, Shiva, and later Shloshim in isolation. Just my wife was at home. That was all. People were fantastic. They brought different foods, and every day we really – we went short of a meal, but at the same time, it was a different experience. I mean, my father passed away a long time ago, so I wasn't experienced, can't remember the experiences of dealing with it immediately, but of course there was no lockdown. So here it was at home, and I must say that being on my own and being in that kind of situation where there were no visitors allowed and sitting down, it was quite cathartic, and I wonder whether it may even be a better way than having people coming here, sitting here, making small talk. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to deal with it yourself, and do you want it, or is it better to be in company and have somebody around you and, you know, vent your feelings? I don't know.
I'm so sorry for your loss, You raise a really important point that, I mean, as you say, this is something that is so specific to this time that, you know, we experience loss and death. It's a thing that we experience all the time, but not being able to have the rituals that we would usually have that provide some sort of structure is experienced differently by different people. So I think, as you say, for some people, having that privacy and that space can be cathartic and healing. And I think for other people, not having those rituals and that structure can be incredibly painful. Something about those rituals provide a sense of, I suppose, comfort and bring in a sense of community. So I think for other people, it can be a huge loss not to have those rituals.
Yes, I think, and also, I have to say, I did in some ways, I had a couple of down days, but I did also, where I could have used a little bit of outside help and maybe just some words of encouragement. But I have to say that people around me with whom I was in contact, like the rabbis, also the people at West Park, how they handled the funeral, et cetera, made it much easier. It was actually quite amazing. But in the main, I found that when I had an opportunity, which I did during that time, to be with my own thoughts, it was, and I've been to houses where there've been people around and people are talking and there's, people are laughing and I'm not too sure what the mourner is really thinking during that time and how they deal with on that level. So maybe this is a way to change to not allow people to come for the first days. I don't know.
Well, I suppose in so many ways, the world is going to be different after this and so many of our experiences will also inform different choices that we'll make going forward. But I mean, something else that you speak about that I think is significant in so many ways, is the importance of, a sense of community and having that social connection, at a time where we feel really isolated. And I mean, in my experience, just with the people who I've worked with and spoken to, what does seem to be evident is that there is a real awareness of what a profound loss, isolation brings. And I think in many ways there are a lot of sort of creative ways that people are thinking about and people are being more conscious, around community and being able to be present for each other, in different ways when we can't be physically present. So as you say, I mean, you had that privacy, but also it sounds like a sensitivity and people providing a sense of connection and community in other ways that can also provide comfort at a time like this.
Which is interesting, yes. Was speaking to a colleague who had lost a parent to COVID, and then the colleague themselves had COVID, so they couldn't actually attend the funeral. And there was such a profound sense of just a lack of closure, just a sense of missing, and a real like an anger that things are not the way they meant to be. And so I think COVID has certainly introduced the absurd or the unexpected on so many levels. And that's hard. That's hard to bear.
There was an elderly man, his wife equally elderly had passed away. The funeral was held and the family or whoever managed, in fact, I think Hatsola actually brought him in one of their vehicles in a wheelchair to the cemetery. And, it was actually a heartbreaking scene to see, because we watched it on Zoom, to see him there. He couldn't approach the grave. Other people were there. And, well, thank goodness, and hats off to hats off. That they did do this and bring him there and all that. But, going back to the COVID situation, so all the homes are standing in gardens, our parents' home and all these places are closed. I have to pick up a parcel this morning at Elfin Lodge, and people there, you can't go in, so people aren't being visited. I don't know what kind of arrangements they make, but if somebody is in a bad way, and when my mother passed away, I hadn't seen her since March, beginning of March, and this was already July, and I know many, many others. I'm not by no means unique. People hadn't visited, so you don't know the condition. You can't give them comfort during that period going up to this point. And then suddenly you get the phone call. That's quite debilitating.
Yeah, I mean, if I think about, as you say, the stories that people have shared around the loss of loved ones, and particularly the loss of elderly family members, I think that has been one of the most profound losses, that period before where you are not seeing each other because, you know, there's no choice and you are protecting each other. And then the loss of not having seen the person, the loved person for that period of time, not having been able to be with them during that most, you know, that time where they were dying and then having to deal with those feelings afterwards. I mean, those losses are so incredibly profound. And, you know, I think what's really important with any type of loss is to be able to acknowledge that there's so many different emotional experiences that you will move through. So, and you know, initially we believed that, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was one of the sort of the great contributors to theory around grief and loss. And she spoke about a stage theory that people went through. And what we understand now is that it's really not that simple. People don't all go through the same things in the same way, but we do experience different emotions at different times. And she, you know, some of the things she spoke about are really quite relevant. So, you know, a sense of shock and denial, you know, the anger often that can be directed in lots of different places, the bargaining, if only I would have done this, things could have been different, if only, and sometimes that can lead to, you know, to a lot of distress and feelings of guilt, real intense feelings of depression, and then an acceptance of what this is. I think it's important just to think about these different experiences, because with any type of loss, you know, people will move in and out of those and other emotional experiences. And just to know that that's normal, and it's important to get support if you need it, and know that it's part of a normal grief process, I think can be comforting in and of itself.
So being in a situation which you find yourself in, this kind of situation, you know, use the same word again, where you now would find, you know, this has happened and, you know, going forward. Now, I guess most people deal with these things in a different way, or everyone deals with it differently, but is there some sort of a guideline? Does one make use of phoning people? Is there things you should tell yourself? I mean, I know prayer plays a big part in the Jewish religion, and of course, you know, we can't say Kaddish, so, as you know, we're having somebody say Kaddish for us. But what do you tell yourself? How do you rationalize it in your own mind that this has happened? And where do you get, if you need the help, how do you get that help? Do you have psychologists online?
Well, I think support can come from lots of different places. Family support and community support, is one of those vital places, but we are very lucky and very blessed that we have a strong infrastructure and a lot of support in the community available. You know, there are different organizations that offer telephonic counseling and other types of support. So I think if one is feeling isolated and overwhelmed and is needing a sense of connection with another person, you know, just finding that in those places are really important. But everybody's grief process is unique. I mean, I think that's also really important, that everybody's going to go through things differently and require different things. So I think it's about also just being in touch with oneself and what you're going through and what you need at that time. And there's no right or wrong way to grieve.
People often, clinicians will let you know that, in fact, the first 6 months of grief looks exactly like depression. That, in fact, there's the similar symptomatology in terms of the laughter, difficulties with sleep and appetite, levels of energy, but that it kind of mimics a type of depression, but that's very normal and acceptable in the first few months following a loss of a loved one.
So there's two sides to it. So there's the side of you, the mourner, the actual person who's experienced the loss, but around you, I guess most people have family, I would hope, have family that they can turn to, but if you're not the mourner, but you're close to the mourner, or you don't see them, what is the approach for somebody to give, you know, to talk to other people, you know, because people phone you and say, I want to wish you long life. What more can one say to a mourner, to give them some comfort? Are the words of wisdom, words of be strong? I mean, I don't know, all these things are, you know, just, niceties, but are they doing anything?
Well, I think that people need to have, often people feel like they need to offer words of wisdom or comfort because they don't know what else to say. I mean, how do you offer any comfort through words when somebody has gone through such a profound loss? You know, I think the most important thing to be able to offer someone, if you are the person who's trying to provide support, is just to be able to say, I am here if you need anything. And I guess that's why some things like meals and practical support is something tangible that one can offer a mourner, because, you know, it's a way of saying, I'm here for you. I'm going to help you to or support you in the most sort of basic fundamental way. But I know that there's nothing that I can do or say to take away your pain. Yeah, I suppose it's about being there to bear the pain with the other person rather than feeling like you needing to make it better for them.
I mean, speaking from personal experience, I appreciated the meals greatly. And I think actually meals sometimes say more than the actual words. You know, sometimes I think in that way, I think it's very tough under these times because different people are in different circumstances. And sometimes it's not, you know, I mean, I think losing my mother in this particular way, you know, she was already over 100 and just over 100 and she was struggling, you know, she was already, you know, not compasses so much. And so I really think that she went to a better place. But some people are losing closer, you know, husbands, wives, sometimes even children. And they need to, you know, under normal circumstances, I guess you could go and pay them a visit and, you know, sit there and have a cup of tea with them. But in these times, you get on the phone and, you know, just sometimes it can make it even worse. Sometimes telling inappropriate jokes, that's me. And sometimes just, you know, in the way that you talk may come across a little bit insincere or just, you know, feeling it's your duty to find that person. So I think that's also difficult.
Mm.
It's a two-way street, actually.
So Stan, from your point of view, I mean, what was it that offered the most support and made you feel the most, comforted through your loss? I mean, you said...
Yeah, from my point of view, I think there were two things. First of all, my wife was here all the time, so, you know, I knew that she was at hand, and if, you know, she would, and she was always available if I needed to talk to her or whatever it is, and she sometimes is a good listener, and so, you know, you appreciate that sort of thing. On an odd occasion, I did speak to people, and my sense of humor, unfortunately, is darker sense of humor, so sometimes I did see the humor in a lot of it. And of course, I knew my mother in the good times, which I preferred to remember her by, and, you know, the way that she conducted her life and the way that she did things, which did make, and I focused a lot on that. In fact, you know, memories came flooding back to me over the period, you know, thinking about different things that had happened. I spoke to my brother who lives in England and we discussed those type of things, you know, really focusing. And we laughed a lot because we actually, we remembered the good things. And I think that if I were to give anyone any advice, I think it would be to remember the person. And in fact, the Hebra, when they, after she had passed away, they asked me that question, would you like to see your mother? And I said, no. Not in the state. I wanted to remember her as she was, not as she is now. And in hindsight, I made the right decision. That would be the advice I would give to somebody. But everybody's different. Some people want to, you know, they want to be there. They need the comfort. They need the closeness. They need the closure on that level, I guess. So, yeah. I'm talking like a psychiatrist. You're supposed to be giving me all this advice.
I mean, you've been through the experience, so you actually are able to you have real insight into what has been comforting for you at this time. But I think just following on to what you're saying, I'm thinking about a friend of mine who lost her father, and it was an incredibly traumatic loss. And because she had been exposed and been with him, she was in isolation after he passed away. So she was totally isolated on her own, didn't have anybody staying with her. And I think she was particularly vulnerable at that time, not being able to have any sort of physical contact, not being able to go to the funeral. So, and that's not an unusual situation at this time. And again, I think that's where we have to really be able to be creative and adaptable when it comes to being able to support each other and help people feel held and supported, even when they are most alone and isolated. I think that's one of the hugest challenges that we face, when we confront death.
I think also, coming with COVID is that many people are left to die with loved ones. So the people that are dying themselves, not really having opportunity to die alongside a loved one, or it's almost, it feels so wrong. That's such a robbing of such a poignant moment. So for the one that's left, and as well as the one that leaves.
So organizations like hospice, how are they operating in these times? I presume that the operation is still carrying on, maybe more so. That might be the only contact the person has.
Yeah, I must be honest. I haven't worked there for quite a long time. So I'm not sure what's happening, how they're working at this point in time. But I also think what's really important to think about also in terms of loss, is that, and obviously, this, the most profound loss, as you say, is the loss of a loved one and everything that comes with that. But there really are so many types of losses that people confront, over this time. As you said earlier, the loss of, for many people, job loss and the loss of sort of financial security. And the insecurity and anxiety that brings, and a loss of, a loss of sort of perceived certainty, that we've got this idea, and it is a fantasy, that life is predictable, one day follows the next, we know what's going to happen, and then this happens, and all the things that we usually rely on that give us a sense of stability and certainty gets shattered. And brings with it a whole lot of anxiety and stress. There's so many losses. The losses of milestones, celebrating milestones, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, weddings, matric dances, playing in the first team rugby, the first rugby team, if that's been your dream your whole school career and now, you're robbed of that. And I know that these are, they're seemingly sort of insignificant relative to other profound things that we're going through. But for individuals, these losses are all real and significant.
So what is going to happen going forward? That's a valid point, because what is this generation of kids going to look back and think about in years to come? About a wasted year, because you can write off 2020 in the main. A lot of what you can do is sports wise and all that. Yes, you have been going to school, but you also have been locked up and, you've been at home. And so your whole year of your life, the age groups from about 6, 5 up to about 18, are going to be affected. So over the years to come, they're going to look back and say, what was it all about? I went through COVID. Are the memories going to be good? Are they going to be traumatic? Is it going to have its effect going forward?
I mean, again, I suppose it all depends on the individual and what their particular situations are. You know, for some people, I mean, with those losses, I mean, there are, and I guess, again, it depends what community you find yourself in and, you know, what your particular family situation and challenges are. And for some people, those losses are really profound and far-reaching. I mean, I think there are kids who'll say that this has been, in certain ways, a really good time. You know, they haven't had to deal with the pressures that come with sort of this frenetic life that we are so caught up in, that it's been a slowing down time. Kids who've been lucky enough to have online schooling have continued to learn. And again, for some kids, particularly those sort of extrovert kids who thrive on those social interactions, you know, it's been incredibly challenging. But I must say, you know, when I think about some of my clients, who struggle with certain aspects of being at school, this has been a nice respite from some of those stresses that come with being in a school environment. So I think it's so dependent on the individuals and the meaning, I guess, that we make of things.
I mean, speaking for myself, I would have been only too happy to have stayed home from school. I would have looked for any excuse. Not that I didn't go to school willingly, but, you know, if I was given the opportunity, I would take it with both hands. I don't know if I would have used it productively, but I certainly would have enjoyed, staying home.
Yeah, I think that has been many kids' experience. And you know, again, the schools, you know, there's obviously such a huge gap. And I mean, what's so devastating is that the gap just continues to grow in terms of, the haves and the have-nots and, you know, the different education, opportunities that different kids have in our country. But kids who have been privileged to have online school have also acquired other skills, being able to be more proficient online. The schools have become more proficient in being able to offer different options and be more adaptable and flexible. So the schools that have those resources have also developed in certain ways.
I think there's another aspect to this whole thing, and I think that, I don't know where to apportion the blame, but if you look at people when they go through their life cycle, they leave school and they go to work, et cetera, et cetera. One day they wake up and they're ready to retire and they don't have enough money for retirement. They were never told at school, listen, you know, you should put some money away, you should look after your finances. And when it comes to a thing like COVID, you know, few people are prepared for this. Whatever situation it is, it's got to have a financial impact. And also it has a social impact on you because, you know, nobody thought that we made arrangements for, nobody ever told us at school, listen, this could happen or that, you know, we always worked on the basis that you would, you know, would go to school, you'd learn the subject. This was when the exams were, you had a degree of certainty, as you said earlier, and you went on with the rest of your life. You get a job, et cetera, et cetera. Now that's not so much. Things have changed dramatically. People see their parents working from home. You know, there's a whole different set of circumstances here and the world is changing. So maybe the schools need to introduce something like, you know, the future, your future, something. I don't know what the word would be, for the lessons, but something about, you know, what do you do when you leave school? Can you, you know, how to open a bank account? Do you know how to get a pension fund? Do you know what you should be doing, what you should be looking for? Do you know, have you got your friends? Have you got all the things in place? Maybe we need to look at that. Be prepared. Maybe it's life preparation skills.
Preparing for the unprepared. But I think that what's interesting is to look at, there's a loss in doing that. There's a loss in optimism or hope in kind of living, expecting the worst to come. And I'm not saying that one shouldn't prepare and have an option B, But in some ways, what COVID has done is it's almost penetrated our bubble in terms of the world feeling safe and secure. And for our children, it certainly introduced loss at a macro level far earlier stage than we typically would have wished for. It certainly introduced a knowing of something that traditionally our children don't know about.
I worked for an uncle, a property business, and he had two expressions which live with me constantly. The one is, he used to say, hope for the best and expect the worst. Mm. And the second one was, don't spend success. In other words, you get something, you do well at a certain point, don't just blow it. You know, save it for the rainy day. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Mm. So what do we do? I didn't take his advice too well.
Certainly, as a Jewish people, we certainly. But I think loss is so much part of Jewish life as well. In terms of our history, it's kind of part of our collective unconscious at some level. That sense of the world feeling unsafe, and I guess that gets evoked in these times in particular. That sense of feeling uncertain and afraid. I mean, is that something you've seen in your practice, AD?
No, absolutely. That there's the sense of, as you say, uncertainty. I suppose the fear around. I mean, there's always the fear around the illness and who can get the illness and will I give somebody the illness or, you know, could I get it? And also the fear around just not knowing when this is going to end and what the world is going to look like after this. I think on so many levels, it sort of permeates, you know, it permeates in different ways.
I mean, there's another big factor in our lives, which I haven't touched on, is that, you know, people used to go, particularly like if you went to shul on Shabbos or, you know, Friday night, you'd get a lot of information about people. I mean, you know, you need to know all these things in the community about what's going on with who's doing what, whom. This is a very important aspect of our Jewish life. If we can't talk about people, what are we all about? And I mean, that's a big gap now.
Yeah. Well, luckily there's the advent of social media that keeps that alive and well.
No, yeah, but it's not fun if it's no fun if you can't pass it on. I mean, if you, you know, where's the...
Yeah, but yeah.
I mean, talking about... Sorry, Nat.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, picking up on what you're saying about social media, I mean, we all know, I mean, that has been the way that that we've been able to, in many ways, stay connected, acquire information, pass on information. But it really is that double-edged sword where it's also what can not just instill but perpetuate a sense of real fear and panic. If you don't limit how much you expose yourself to, particularly around the pandemic and the negativity and the fear, I mean, it really can be re-traumatizing if you are not careful with, you know, how much you expose yourself to. And also, you know, there's so much false information out there. So, you know, all of these things really cannot be that double-edged sword.
Yeah, so are there things to signs to look for when you're at home? I mean, not just, you know, maybe you're talking to yourself, which I think is probably okay as long as you don't answer back. But working with yourself, living with yourself at home, you know, dealing with it on that basis, are there things to look for, signs to look for that you're actually losing the plot? Or... See, I'm fortunate I can come on the show and say these type of things. So I don't have to talk to myself. I can talk to the audience. But other people sitting at home might not be so fortunate.
I think, I think people will have good days and bad days, and that's normal. But this is a time where we are more vulnerable to becoming depressed, becoming overwhelmed with anxiety. And so, you know, I think one has to be, you're self-aware. But certainly if you feel like, you know, you're not able to see the good and everything feels negative and bad, if you feel yourself having, you know, not being able to get out of bed or having the opposite, insomnia, if you have major appetite changes, I suppose if you're overwhelmed by a sense of hopelessness and helplessness, and it's not just some days, you know, if you feel like you can't see beyond it, those are signs that that you really may need extra support.
Does one have the capacity to notice it in oneself, or does one have to look at it in others? And, you know, should one be speaking up in those types of circumstances? How do you recognize those signs?
Well, I think you can. Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. I think sometimes people aren't able to self-reflect, and hopefully, you know, if you've got people close to you who are either staying with you or in touch with you, you know, that would be a way that you might be alerted to it if somebody's able to reflect on it. But I think that being able to sort of be self-aware and be in touch with how you're feeling, and just being able to even name the feelings and the experiences that you're going through, even if it's to yourself, as you say, I mean, that does help you to be able to be more self-aware and get a sense of whether you're needing more support.
So in your practice, when the kids come to you, are they feeling the effect? I mean, is it something which they talk about, or are they just talking about normal stuff? I don't want you to tell us too much. I mean, it affects, you know, the privacy of people. But is there are people being affected at that age, or is it something which that's kind of everybody's kind of getting used to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in a way there's a bit of both. I mean, we're sort of 5 months down the line. And so, you know, kids are adaptable. I think, you know, it's talking specifically about kids. Sometimes, you know, a lot of kids have almost started adjusting to this new normal. But on the other hand, there are real anxieties and fears that they come with. And I mean, just thinking about sort of the therapy relationship and the therapy process, where before kids would come into my office and have all the sort of various toys that they could play with and express themselves through, that isn't available to them anymore because, you know, a lot of us are only doing online therapy. So just being able to find different ways, just being able for children and adults to be able to find different ways of expressing themselves, even in a therapy relationship where you're sitting behind a screen. I mean, that in and of itself brings many challenges.
Yeah, I suppose when you're looking somebody in the eye across the table or across from the chair to the couch or wherever you do this, is a lot different from being online, because you can hide or mask some of your emotions on that. Must be much more difficult to deal with it.
And what's also unique to this experience is that the practitioner is just as vulnerable as the person, as the client, and that we're going through this process simultaneously and collectively, and that has an impact on the kind of treatment when you're in the experience. Have you found that?
Oh, sorry, I lost you for a second.
I'm saying,
that's what happens when you're online. That's exactly what I was saying. So the question was, are you experiencing the same as what Natalie was describing? I've forgotten what she was describing.
That's what I lost you.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is that
not a very long attention span.
I say that as a practitioner, you're in the same situation as your clients, so you're not separated or having a different perspective. You're equally addressing the same fears, the same kind of anxieties, which has a particular impact on the kind of therapist you become and the therapy that you give, for good and for bad.
Absolutely.
Have you noticed that kind of, you don't have a perspective, you're in it.
Exactly. So you are, as you say, just as vulnerable, and that does give you, a different type of empathy. But at the same time, you really are also often feeling the same feelings that your clients might be feeling at that exact time. You know, and I think that's also, again, I mean, one of the big challenges, and I suppose getting back to the topic of loss, so often people who are in the helping, profession, whether you are doing sort of mental health work, or of course, I mean, in the situation, the real medical work, sometimes there is this illusion or the sense that you are, you have some distance, or you are the healer in inverted commas, but everybody here is vulnerable. And in fact, we know that our healthcare workers, for example, are particularly vulnerable to getting the virus, and of course to being affected, also being affected by all the psychosocial challenges that come with working in this: burnout, post-traumatic stress, depression, various anxiety that takes various forms. So self-care for everybody is vitally important.
I think those doctors and/or the medical profession are struggling also, because a lot of them have to go home and they're bringing the virus with them. And so, I know one particular household where the healthcare worker is working in a hospital and has come home and the whole family is affected or infected. And so, so those things must have a big role in how you're dealing with the problem. But somebody I was talking to somebody the other day. Funny enough, one of these people that push these trolleys around collecting plastic and whatever, he's quite oblivious to the fact that there's COVID going on, because his main objective is how can he push this trolley with all the plastic up the hill and get it to the place where he can get some money to do it. So his objectives are completely different. He's not, COVID is like a secondary thing. Of course, he's wearing a mask and he's doing all the things that he's been told to do, but the primary focus in his life is the next meal. Mm. I think that makes a difference to people who are, as you said earlier, privileged to have online schooling, et cetera. So not dealing with the practical side of things every day, of your meal, what you're going to wear, can you go to school, parents come home. Problem.
But exactly, there's so many layers and so many levels of potential loss that people are coping with. And for many people in our country, it is that profound. It's about survival. It's about, not necessarily will I die or will I have losses directly because I get the virus, but Does all the lockdown and all the restrictions mean that I don't have enough food and finances to survive and for my family to survive? So there are the most sort of profound, physical basic losses where people's very fundamental basic needs, and the fulfillment of that are challenged. And then, I suppose our more higher order needs, as Maslow described it, and, how those get challenged and the losses around that.
I was going to say, in the remaining few minutes, because we're getting to the end, can you, I'm going to talk about some project of the HOD, the Hebrew Order of David, but I'd just like to hear, can you sum up, just something to give people a little bit hope. If they're feeling down, what should they do? Should they call somebody? If people don't want to discuss it with their families or something, they want some outside help, what would you advise?
Yes, I think it's such an important way to end, because we have focused on how profound the losses are in so many ways. But I think the most important thing when we're thinking about loss is that, as human beings, we are built to adapt and to survive the hardest of things, you know. And in a way, the more I suppose, first of all, the more we can reach out. First of all, being able to acknowledge what we need and being able to acknowledge that this is a particularly difficult, vulnerable time, and it is normal, as Natalie said, to be going through loss. And it is okay. There's no shame. There's no weakness. I mean, just being able to acknowledge that is the first step. Again, being able to find connections, whether it's through community, family, professional connections, and support. I mean, that can be one of the fundamental mediators of loss. And I think also just being able to find meaning in this really difficult time, you know, being able to take one day at a time. You know, so much of our anxiety and distress is perpetuated when we try and focus on the things that we can't change. So we try and focus rather on the things that we can change. And when we do that, we realize that there can be a lot of movement actually towards healing. I think also just being able to focus on the moment and the good things in the present moment. You know, the techniques people use, like mindfulness, as you say, prayer, all of those can be really useful strategies. Being able to focus on the present moment, but also being able to know that even though we don't know how things are going to look after this, this too will pass. And yeah, not to feel ashamed or that it's a sense of weakness to reach out for support if you need it.
Okay, so I'm going to just talk about the project we're busy with at the Broad of David. I'll come back to you in a moment if you'll just stay on the line, both you and Natalie, give you a chance to give yourself a punt and have your Woolworths card and your my school card and your card ready so you can give the information. Meantime, I'll just tell you, the Hebrew of David, every year for the last 50 or 40 years, we've been collecting parcels at this time of the year because Yontif is coming up. We have a Bringing Yontif Joy project, which we get donations from a very, very generous public. We send out emails, people donate. You can donate by EFT, you can donate to our PayFast account. If you want more information, you can get our details from our website, which is www.hodavid.org. But this year we're doing something completely different. We're still going to be giving people an extra food parcel at Yontif, which contains goodies which they wouldn't normally get at this time of the year. And you can imagine when you're sitting at your table over Yontif and having a slap-up meal, even in isolation, other people are having to eat very, very sparse food with not much joy in it. So we try to bring on to joy. But this year we're going out of that zone within the Jewish community, and we've opened up at the HOD Center. We have a collection point where you could bring clothing, anything you might want to bring which could be useful for people. We are distributing to various communities outside of the Jewish community and various things from places like squatter camps and places where really people are in dire straits. We also are delivering parcels of food, so if you can bring anything that's not perishable, don't bring loaves of bread or, you know, cooked chickens. Bring us stuff in cans or something which we can transport and pack and bring it to the center, or you can donate. And we're doing this in Johannesburg, there's in Port Elizabeth, in the Eastern Cape. We're doing it in Durban. We're doing it in Cape Town. So we're really trying to do this on a national, we have a national footprint, and we're trying to get this out there and really to help people. We've already distributed big amounts. We've given donations to Yad Aharon. We've given donations to the Hebra. We've given donations to Union of Jewish Women for, you know, to help with their projects. And so really we need your help. The public has been extraordinarily generous. Money is starting to come in. And as I say, if you need the information, you can phone my number, which is on the website, or you can phone, I'll give it to you now, 082-963-4028. And that really is what we're about, the Hebrew of David, love thy neighbor as thyself. So, Aideen and Natalie, thank you for being with us. Aideen Davis, a psychologist, a practicing psychologist. Aideen, just give us your bit of what you can do, how they can contact you. Do you have a website?
Thanks. So I don't.
I need some help.
I don't have a website, but I'm happy to give my my phone number and my email address. So my phone number is 082-411-7327. And my email address is Aideen Davis. So it's AdeenDavis@gmail.com.
Okay, so we'll put that out. And if anybody wants to contact me, you can find me on my number. I'll give that detail. That's 082-963-4028. And thank you for coming on the show. And Natalie, I've elevated you through all, your salary hasn't doubled or anything like that, but you're now helping to co-host, and thanks for helping us. Is there anything you'd like to add? This time I didn't give you much chance to talk. Thank you. You've been most helpful during this time, and give us a punt about yourself, what you're doing, anything you want to tell us about anything.
I've just been involved. I think during this time, I've just been involved in some training, organizing talks, because it certainly introduced to different doing things. And certainly, I think, as Aideen, you would say, almost the year of the introvert, that certainly one can imagine not all doom and gloom. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah.